All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Talk Openly. For a second there, I almost forgot the name of our show. I was very grateful that it just rolled off the
Nice. And as one of the advantages of habit patterns.
Yeah, totally, right? Yeah, yep. Interesting point. Yeah, that we can create positive habit patterns that counteract maybe some of the negative ones. But yeah, nice. Okay, good little introduction there.
Yeah. Hi,
Hi.
Jack. Hi, everybody. Nice
Good
to see y'all.
to see you too. Yeah. So last week we explored the topic of Sangha and we kind of got into some introductory stuff around like what exactly is Sangha, what are the different types of Sangha, and how amazing is Sangha. And tonight in a little bit we're going to talk more about what some practitioners, particularly that I've heard from Shravasti Abbey, have called the rock tumbler aspect of Sangha, where we kind of have to bump up against one another to be able to polish some of our edges. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm looking forward to it. I feel very fondly actually about this topic and how Sangha can work in that way. So I'm looking forward to it, Daniel.
Me too, Jack.
Yeah. Well, how about a little check-in? How you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. I just showed up hot on the heels of a fantastic softball game that my daughter was playing in. So got to hang out outside and yell and scream and hoot and holler, which was great. It was actually super energizing. I had like I don't know if it's like allergies or if I'm just tired or what, but I had sort of like a little bit of an off day, just kind of like low energy. But I being outside and like I said, hooting and hollering at a softball game certainly brought up the I don't know, it elevated my mood. So super nice. Yeah, it's good stuff. Right. And generally speaking, I think like as far as practice goes, man, it's good stuff. I just keeps on moving, right? Like and having its effect. And it's interesting to notice how it changes form. I noticed so the other day, yesterday actually, I had an interesting experience where normally I'm doing shamatha, right? Primarily shamatha practice. And I noticed that my mind was very, very clearly wanting to examine impermanence, and in particular, the impermanence of life. And at first, I sort of resisted. I was like, oh no, that's a distraction. That's a distraction. And then I was like, no, actually, it's fine. Make that your object, right? Like, actually focus on that if that's what you want to focus on. And it was interesting because it was beyond, it was not a morbid experience. It was really quite beautiful to sit with it. And, words really can't express sometimes what we experience in meditation. And I think this is one of those situations where I really can't say that there was anything in particular other than this sort of like, yeah, and that's how that
For
is.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. And yeah, I wonder, I'd be curious what Lama and some of our meditation instructors say about that kind of like shifting the topic, because like I wonder if that, kind of going into an analytical meditation, like you said, that can kind of like you can obviously do shamatha on like a analytical topic like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, that's great. I
Well,
think
I'm definitely far from any type of an expert on this. Not even a novice or maybe an amateur. But I had a conversation one time with Lama about it, where I said, there's a lot of talk about shamatha vipassana, and I noticed that all we're doing is shamatha, and there's no vipassana practice going on here at the temple. And then he corrected me, and he said, no, it's shamatha vipassana. It's two sides, it's both, right? And so through the shamatha meditation, vipassana, insight meditation, analytical meditation can arise. And I'm not sure if he meant what I was talking about just now. I'm still not entirely clear about that. Although I do have some experiences that make me think like, oh, right, that's what he's talking about. And so that's kind of what led me to just like lean into it. I was like, all right, Yeah, if it's going to be an analytical meditation, let's analyze it. Let's go for it. And, I'm not sure that there were any keen insights, but it was definitely a good experience. I think it's easy to move along in life, and even if we can sort of intellectually understand, like, oh yes, it's all impermanent, we all die and everything, it's actually quite different to sit and like visualize that with your loved ones, with yourself, with other beings, and like really sit with like what would that be like for a long time. Just that's all you're looking at, and that sort of intimacy with the subject was it was moving. Like there was this sort of like this sense of like urgency, to waking up and really being there, being alive, right? And being connected, like alive through connection with all of these people, these beings. And I thought that was quite beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how important it is to really like settle the mind when thinking about these topics. Because I think, I mean, if I'm on to, I might be onto something with this that I've been kind of thinking about recently about like so much of meditation, I think, is kind of preparing us for death, right? And
Yeah.
can I kind of maintain this stability and calm, even in the face of something that feels completely unknown? But if we are, like you're doing with this analytical meditation, familiarizing our minds as much as we can right now
Yeah.
with what that might be like, that's going to be really important, and I hope very steadying for our minds when we do die. So I was gonna say,
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to
Oh my gosh. I felt you moving towards that. And I, not
it.
gonna lie, like, yeah, there's actually there is this little part of me. I'm not like wanting it to happen tonight or
Right.
tomorrow or anytime soon. I'd like to live a long life. But there is a part of me that sort of I guess kind of looks forward to it, right? And I'd love to see the way that my mind works in the Bardo states. I've been having Jack on a whole nother line of thought, man. I have had a lot of really like vivid dreams that I remember, which is unusual for me. It's been happening now for a few weeks. I think I've talked about it maybe a little bit. But what's really kind of interesting about it is the way that I can really see it. It's happening more and more where I'm like, oh, there's my dreaming going on and on and on. I can see how they like how those kinds of like dream states form both as I'm sleeping and when I'm awake. I can kind of see when my mind is drifting off into that kind of made up world. It's just me, my concepts, my thoughts, my whatever. And so that makes me kind of excited about like, oh, well, that's perhaps similar to the Bardo states. I can't remember the last time I was in one of those. But I imagine that it's something quite similar, right? And that if we are training our mind in life, then when we get there, like you said, we'll be more stable and perhaps more capable of making or however that works, making good decisions or moving in the right direction.
Interesting. Cool. And I know our Lojong practice, right? We're being encouraged on, every day and everything that we experience, to recognize this kind of dreamlike nature of what we're
Yeah.
experiencing, that it is ever shifting, ever transient, and we can't grasp onto it, just like a dream. So, if we can, both in dreaming and, awake states can just kind of even glimpse a little bit of it kind of, for me, it feels like a little bit of a breeze of recognition. Like it's not like
Yeah.
I'm noticing it at all. It's just like a little bit of like, oh, that I felt something there. I
Yeah.
felt
Well,
something.
I think beyond just the impermanence, sort of ever shifting aspect of it, that's definitely a big part of it. There's this other aspect too, though, which is the like the sort of projection, the mental projection onto whatever is is being experienced. Because there is something, right? There's some type of energetic movement flow of something, something's happening. And in its on its own, it's pure and it's neutral, right? And there is no actual story behind it, right? There isn't that whatever that is, that's me. That's me doing that, right?
Yeah. And how interesting, like, you know, do you ever have these dreams that are really intense, right? And in the dream, like, you're just so, like, you believe it. You just really believe it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've had dreams where, like, my parents have died or something, and I wake up and I'm still, like, sobbing. Like, it's that,
yeah.
like, you know, kind of, it was that real to me in the dream. Or, you know, on the other hand, having dreams where, like, I'm like laughing uncontrollably about something
Yeah.
that in the dream I found like that is hilarious. And I wake up and it's like, I'm still laughing, but it's not very funny. You know?
Right. You don't quite see it. And sometimes you think like, how did I miss that? Like, none of that makes any sense. Like this morning I woke up to the Dalai Lama and I went grocery shopping together. And,
nice.
Yeah. And then we were going to cook a meal together. So we had to go get some groceries. And then he was driving. I was just in his car. We park in his garage. And like, as I'm hopping out, like he tells me, oh yeah, the cat's not supposed to be in the car and something. I don't know what, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. And when I woke up, I was like, man, like, first of all, that's kind of cool. And also, how did I not notice that that was a dream?
Yeah, totally. The Dalai Lama's in there being like, you realize that cats don't really go in cars, and like, I don't really make meals with people. So
Right.
Like, what
I'm not driving. I'm not driving people around. I don't have.
Right.
I don't have a garage to park my car in.
Right. That's so funny. Oh man, yeah. Maybe one day, we'll be able to catch those moments and be able to engage a little bit with
yeah,
them.
See, how cool would that be if I was able to do lucid dreaming, then I would have been able to recognize it, and then I'd be able to talk to the Dalai Lama, right, and inquire, you know.
Ask some good questions.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
how fun, how pleasant and sweet though. That's like a really nice dream.
Yeah. Oh, totally good stuff. Yeah. I haven't, none of these, like, I've had all kinds of weird dreams, but they're all pretty lighthearted and easygoing. Then no, there's no heavy stuff in there. Not recently anyway. So thank goodness.
Yeah.
For that.
You're light. That's
Yeah.
cool.
It's light. It's easy. It's good. It's playful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, what about you? How's your dream life?
Oh, my dream life is kind of like dead.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there hasn't been much activity happening up there.
Or even your waking dream life. How about that?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, good reminder. Well, in terms of my training, I'm 2 days in a row where I've gotten up early enough to do shamatha in the morning. So I'm feeling kind of good about that.
Heck yeah.
And you know, if it doesn't happen in the morning tomorrow, I'm not going to beat myself up for it. I'll do it later in the day. But it was nice to just kind of be like, okay, I can get back into this routine again. I can do this. This morning I read a little passage from the meditation instruction text that I'm reading right now. And it was a really good passage for me to read. It was about cutting through thoughts. In meditation and really deciding like, nope, I'm not going to engage. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm not going to engage, you know? And it was, there was just such a great description about how like we can suddenly kind of find ourselves thinking, you know, like there's not even a beginning point. It's just like,
right.
we're in that thinking process. And so just to immediately cut it off. And that's good. It went really well. It was incredibly fast. My timer went off in no time. I was really surprised. So that was good. It was like there was some really strong engagement with that. And it was also encouraging because, you know, the passage was describing how like, you know, you might be noticing more thoughts in your meditation. That doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. You know, it actually means you're doing it right because you're just noticing how much the mind thinks. And, you know, even though like I've heard that from, you know, Rinpoche, our teacher, and, you know, other teachers, like still it like it hasn't sunk in. Like I still kind of feel like, oh, I shouldn't be thinking right now, you
Yeah.
know. So I definitely tried to internalize that during my sit this morning. And yeah, I think it was a one where I was very much engaging with the skill, the technique of the cutting through thoughts. So that felt good. Because I do have to be honest, like my shamatha has been so much like reverie, you know, like this kind of reverie state of just kind of like not necessarily working to apply the antidotes.
Yeah.
Like I'm recognizing that I'm thinking and that like, okay, time to come back, but I'm not really actively engaging my mind. And so I think this was a nice little Kickstarter back into like, no, let's do some actual shamatha.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, you got to give us one tip for cutting through the thoughts.
I mean, honestly, it's just as simple as like the second that you notice that you're thinking, just directly return to your object. You know, don't try and think like, where did that thought come from? Don't try and think like, you know, well, that person, you know, made me mad. So I should really like consider how I should approach that person. You know, like do not
And
entangle
don't add
yourself.
more thinking on top of
Yeah.
that.
Don't add more. As you know, as juicy as the thought may seem, it really doesn't have any weight. And so just come back. And so yeah, it was a good meditation on like what kind of attachments do I have? Like what things kind of get me more like to add thinking on top of thinking, you know, and just to really like, okay, that's cool, great. I can identify that, just come back. So yeah, it was great. I'm grateful to our teacher for assigning me that text. Yeah, and then otherwise, in terms of like life training, it was funny last week we talked a little bit about like how I felt like my kind of self-hate, self-loathing stuff had really gone down. And I would say it very much has. But there was like this moment last week where I really felt this kind of like surge of like just self-annoyance and frustration come
Ooh,
up.
yeah.
It was really interesting. I was like, oh gosh, I haven't felt this in a while. That's okay. And so what was, I think, a sign of how the training has helped is that it wasn't that I didn't feel the same feelings or have similar thoughts as I used to have. It was that I had the feelings, I had the thoughts, and I didn't race off with them. I cut through the thought. I was just like, oh, that's a similar pattern that I've had. I don't need to engage with it. And
Nice.
it was so great. And I can be, you know, pretty hard on myself. Like that's a little bit my baseline is just being really hard and kind of critical. And the thing that I was feeling some like self-loathing about was just kind of feeling like one of like the altruistic things that I did recently like may have been tainted by kind of like ego and like, you know,
Sure.
wanting praise and whatnot. And I think that both of those can exist at the same time. Obviously, we want to work on like not having the motivation be about ourselves, right? But right now, that stuff just kind of sits side by side for me right now.
Yeah.
But what I was reminded was that actually, and Rinpoche has said this, intention. What was my intention? You know? And when I really think about it, I was like, oh yeah, I really did want to do something nice for that person.
Yeah.
And you know, like maybe there was some stuff afterwards where I was like, ooh, it was nice to be praised about that, you know, like that felt good. Really my intention, I believe, was to offer something to this individual. So
That's cool how
yeah.
you were able to, rather than just running with it or being ignorant of it, you were aware of it, you recognized it, and you got to be with it. Like, oh, there's praise. Look at that feeling. It feels good. Okay. Look at
Yeah.
nice. Right. And to be able to examine your motivation, your intentions, and to see that your intentions were pure, and that indeed it does feel good to be praised. It doesn't mean that we have to chase after it, but when it's there, nothing wrong with the good feeling of being praised.
Totally. Yeah. I think there's definitely still some of like the Puritan in me where
Of
I'm like,
course.
things can't feel good. Things must be hard and difficult and strenuous.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
No pleasure allowed.
Yeah, that whole like self deprivation, right? Or somehow like we somehow push away the good stuff, thinking that it ought not to be there, that we're somehow bad for enjoying it. But no, it's just not getting attached to it, not making that the intention, not making that the motivation to get that, and not letting it linger, just witnessing it and being like, yeah, that's a nice feeling. I love that feeling. Praise, oh my God, I love it. Certainly, I still am attached to it, so I still chase after it a bit. But no, I think that's beautiful, and good on you. Nice work, Jack.
It's the Buddha Dharma emerging, all these little ways that it's emerging in all of us. We get to, yeah.
Your jewel is more polished than it was a year ago.
That's right. Yeah, we get to see it becoming more polished. It's fabulous. Hey, you're sitting in the kitchen of Lions Roar Dharma Center.
Standing in the kitchen at Lions Roar Dharma
Standing.
Center.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's nice to see you there. It's nice to kind of imagine the temple, and imagine maybe I'm also standing by the counter. Hey, temple. Well, thanks for being there. I'm going to be there in a couple of weeks.
I can't wait to see. Are you coming for retreat?
I'm coming for retreat.
Can't wait to
Yeah.
see you.
Yes, refuge students, there's opportunities for a re retreat. And
Refuge
so,
and entering the path.
oh, sweet. Thanks for that clarification. Yeah. So that's going to be really great. I'm looking forward to it.
I think the sign-up period or the registration period is coming, going to be ending pretty soon. We want to get on that soon if we
Yeah,
have
get
time.
on that. It's a good opportunity. Go out to a beautiful place and learn
Absolutely.
with our teacher and our friends.
Yep, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, shall we do some random Lojong sloganing?
I think we shall.
All right, let's do it. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see here. I think we got this. Can you see the RLSG?
I sure can.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, we got this one. Was it last
I
time?
think it was
Begin
last time.
sequence of exchange with yourself. Should we try another one? I
All
mean,
right. Yeah.
we
Yeah.
can talk about how, I mean, the RLSG sometimes wants to bring things up multiple times because they're important. So we do need to start with ourselves when it comes to Tonglen practice. But we're gonna try another Lojong. because it's fun to get new ones. So, all right. Number six, in post meditation, be a child of illusion. Nice. So it says here, Trala Kyabgyon, the way to elevate and liberate ourselves on the spiritual path is by maintaining the perspective of the insubstantial nature of things in our everyday activities. Instead of viewing people and things as discrete and unique, we need to bring the understanding of dependent arising to our everyday lives.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly that. It's amazing to me how it doesn't matter actually how much dream analysis or looking and seeing impermanence and it no matter how much I do that, it still crystallizes very quickly, you know? It's very easy for things to become very solid
Yeah.
quickly, right? I mean, there's more space, and there is more fluidity, and there is more recognition of the insubstantial nature of things, right? But it's amazing when I get, like for me anyway, when if I get provoked, angry, irritated, that type of thing, then man, things become really hard and very real.
They sure do. Yeah. I like what you said about things getting kind of crystallized pretty quickly, where it's like, yeah, everything just become like, even if it's just an idea, an idea can really become solid. Beliefs about people and their intentions, their motivations, those things can become so solid. Like I create this narrative about people and myself, and these things can really get solidified. And can you scroll up just a little bit back to the slogan itself? So it's just such an interesting phrasing of this slogan, so poetic. So in post meditation, be a child of illusion. And I remember when like I was first starting out with Lojong, this was one of the ones where I was like, I don't know what y'all are talking about. I don't get it. I still don't get it, but it's definitely I can understand that willingness to kind of learn. I think there's something about here with like being a child, we're being willing to kind of like just openly engage with our world in the way that children do, kind of like a little bit less dualistic, more kind of like, I just kind of want to see what's happening here, like I'm interested, I'm curious.
Curiosity, right? That's exactly it. I like that you pointed that out, that it's this there's a it's a childlike beginner's mind, of witnessing, of not knowing, right? Like, I don't know, because if we know, then it's something solid that we know, right? And if we don't know, and it's big open, and it's got this sort of beginner childlike mind to it, then it's going to be more flowy. We're going to see that illusion as it sort of shifts. That what's it referred to sometimes as the magical display of dynamic energy.
Whoa, where's that from?
I don't know
Cool,
what
I like it.
that. How do you take this last part though? So dependent origination, obviously that's not the topic for tonight, but how do you, where it says we need to bring the understanding of dependent arising to our everyday lives, how do you interpret that, or how do you imagine that?
Well, I mean, I consider there's ways that we can think about that in everything that we do. I really like that we're encouraged to offer our food before eating it. So making a little prayer of offering to the Buddhas. And that's one way of touching in with dependent arising, is that like there's no way that I could exist without the food on this plate, like that. And that means that there's all these different people and creatures and ecosystems and all the things that have come together to provide me this meal. And so then offering up that like kind of gratitude for our existence through dependent arising, that's just one way,
Yeah, I love that you went that way with it. It's right? Like that it is, everything is this interdependent, of this interdependent nature. I was thinking of it kind of in terms of dependent origination, right? The whole cycle, right? Where the ignorance leading to the formation of mental thoughts, right? And karmic action and all of that, and how that's actually the cycle of birth and death and rebirth and death, right? And I actually don't have much of an understanding of that. I have only like very basic, like not even an understanding. Purely conceptual. And even there, it's the same kind of thing where it is this sort of recognizing, like, oh, that projection onto this dynamic process of, energetic flow, that projection is in fact based on ignorance on my end, and of these habitual tendencies to think and see things in a certain light, right?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up.
Well, oh, there's
Check
a
that out.
ooh, a nice mandala tonka.
That's beautiful.
I wish we could see the original color. It looks a little muted, but that's cool.
That is cool.
I
Nice.
love all the images that Dirk put on there.
Yeah, he's got a good collection. We got to get that guy back on the show
Yeah, we
sometimes.
do. All right. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Let's make it a point.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, speaking of Dirk and other lovely Sangha and the things that they bring, let's pivot a little bit. We're talking about Sangha again. But this time focusing a little bit more on like where Sangha might feel somewhat challenging. So I think it's gonna be fun. And ultimately, I think like the rock tumbler is not meant to be a metaphor that makes us scared of engaging with Sangha. In fact, I think that with our ability to engage in like meaningful conflict and difference with one another, that there's just such beautiful relationships that can form.
Oh,
So,
without a doubt. And
yeah.
I hope that you'll I hope that maybe you'll back up a minute and explain where the rock tumbler
I will,
metaphor
yeah.
came from. I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. And one aspect of it is that it is easy to see the friction and the challenge of a rock tumbler and think of it as, ooh, that's ooh, challenging or it's hard or difficult. And maybe there are those sort of challenging aspects to life in a rock tumbler. But you know, a lot of the action is harmonious as well, right? And positive in nature. And so it's not all bad, it's not all hard, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and the purpose of a rock tumbler is to polish the stones. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Bring out our good qualities. So the first time that I heard the rock tumbler metaphor was in watching a couple YouTube videos of various nuns at Shravasti Abbey. They have these wonderful talks on YouTube. If you haven't checked out Shravasti Abbey, which is the monastery that Thubten Chodron is the abbess of, definitely
Will you
check it
spell
out.
it just so people can get
Yes. Okay. So Shravasti Abbey, so they are a group of monastics, mostly nuns, who all live together, right? That's part of like kind of the monastic role, is that they're living in community. They describe this idea of community as being like a rock tumbler, where all of them are these different rocks getting thrown into the tumbler. And what happens is that we're just kind of like hitting up against each other's differences, or maybe even more often, each other's similarities, that then kind of like makes us see ourselves, and it's kind of ugly. We don't like it, and so that image has always struck me. And I've also just like felt so much admiration for all that they do at this abbey, and that they're just going to be living with each other, for all their lives, and teaching one another. It's really amazing. But apparently it's not, it didn't originate with them. Like there's other communities, even like Christian monastics, who have brought up this idea of the rock tumbler in community. So it's certainly a familiar idea, especially for folks living in community. But I think it's pretty evident to me that we don't need to all live together to still experience the great qualities of the rock tumbler. What do you think?
Oh man, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I wanted to say thank you, first of all, about pointing me to those YouTube videos. I have watched a few, you know, but I hadn't watched any of the rock tumbler ones. So I
Yeah.
went down this rabbit hole, which I thought was it was humorous. It was, you know, it was funny and it was interesting too, the way that the various nuns or people who were living in the community, how they described their own experiences in the rock tumbler, and how they get shaped and what their misunderstandings are like. And I mean, there was actually a decent amount of laughter going on at what they were talking about, and that's the thing, is that we're not monastics and we're not living together in that sense, but we are part of the community. And that was one thing that struck me in, I watched, I think, three of the talks in the last few days. One of the things that kind of got me was this notion that, like, that until they entered into that community, they thought they knew what community was, right? They thought they were part of their community, right? But they didn't actually have the faintest idea of what real community is until they arrived there and started to have these interactions, forming these bonds, and having, crashing into the grit and the rock and the tumbling action, where they were like, in the beginning, it was like, oh my God, like the stories of them just wanting to run away and just like, what did I get myself into, right? And then how, with the help of, some of the senior students and nuns who were there, how they got some, they got a little perspective. They were encouraged, like, hey, you can do it, like, yeah, it's a little hard in the beginning. It takes a little getting used to, but you'll get it. You deserve it and you can do it.
I really loved the story. One of the nuns was describing how very early on in being at the Abbey, she had an experience where she moved like a kata from a Buddha statue after like a couple weeks. The teacher had been there and put the kata on there. And so she removed it. And then another nun came in and was like, "You cannot do that." Like, no, like was pretty upset and expressing herself. And so this other nun went to their teacher and was like, "I cannot withstand this. Like, this will not stand. Like, I can't do this." And what did her teacher say? All right, like, "You can.
You can.
You can.
You
You can do
can.
it, actually."
I love that story,
I thought
because
it was
what
so
she had,
great.
what I think what she had said was that she had made a promise to herself to never, ever, ever be involved in any situation where people were yelling at her. And man, I gotta say, like, that resonated with me, because I cannot stand being yelled at, and it's like, it's super triggering for me. If somebody yells at me, I lose all respect for them. I get super defensive. It like lingers for a very, very, very long time. So I felt her pain. Like, she had been yelled at, right, about moving the kata, and she was trying to do something good, right? And so I can just imagine her feelings of like, I don't deserve that. That was wrong. That person is, you could just imagine how her mind was in flamed, right? Just on fire with all that friction of the, being yelled at, and then to be told, you could do
You can do it. Yeah.
it.
Yep. You're fine. And well, there's a couple things that seem really important about that is that, like, we have to be so careful with our minds when we notice that friction, because what can happen if, we're not thinking about the kind of choices that we've made to engage with this community intentionally, is that we can start to like develop resentment around certain people very easily, right? And this is such an example of wrong view, right? Like if we get yelled at or something, or we disagree with the way that someone's doing something, we start to see that person as solid and as that they are that behavior that we dislike. It becomes that is who they are, and they can't change. They're not going to change. So we have to avoid them. We have to fight them. We have to, whatever our strategies have been
They
to
become our
deal with
arch
those.
nemesis.
And so we have to be really careful with our minds, to not get stuck in those same ruts.
Well, but no, hang on. I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm going to say yes, and so we do have to be careful. careful with our minds. But more, sort of more important, I think, is to stay in the rock tumbler.
Yes.
So even if you're not careful with your mind, and if you develop greater ignorance, a greater inflamed ego, and even more attachment, that's okay. Those are your rough edges, and that's what's going to get polished, right? So in a way, I've heard Lama talk about, he's used the metaphor of a dojo, right? Where, practitioners are able to kind of spar with each other in a safe, controlled environment, right? So, I feel that, like, it's okay. Like, maybe there will be some of that, but we can do it. Just stay, right? Just stay in it.
And see it for what it is, that it's like, okay, this is, this reaction that I'm having does not mean that it's real. Like, this is my mind.
That's
this
right.
Is my mind. Yes.
That's right.
And maybe I'm even going to kind of like ramp it up in my mind.
Sure.
You know, so I can exaggerate it and see how absurd it is, even, but it does mean that that is in fact real about that other person.
That's right. Exactly that, man. I think it's fantastic. I went along sort of naively. I've had a gentle experience in our little rock tumbler of a Sangha. Until recently, I started to get some of my edges showing up. So our friend Bill here, he did something really kind of cool. He did this self-organizing cleaning schedule or cleaning setup. I won't go into details about it, but other than cleaning up after events at the Dharma Center, I've never ever participated in any of the cleaning, the regular maintenance cleaning, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I was all excited. I love this thing. Bill, if you're listening, good job. I love this thing. And so I took on the duty of cleaning the kitchen once a week. And boy, was I happy to, to do this. And like, really, like, I was like, oh man, this is great. Like, I feel so good mopping the floors and cleaning every little speck and like cleaning out the garbage cans and all of that. But then what happened was I became like the owner of the kitchen in my mind. Right. Now, up until then, I never cared. It didn't matter. Someone was going to clean the kitchen. It got cleaned. I don't know who did it, but like, it wasn't me. But now all of a sudden it's my kitchen.
Yeah.
And I notice, I'm like, why did they do that? Why did they do that? Like, so here's a, oh my gosh, where is it? anyway, there was a little French press, coffee press, right? And there's a note that someone else, a sticky note that someone else had put next to it that says, if you use the French press, be sure to immediately clean it, like throw the grounds away and clean it out and put it back. Do not leave the grounds in the French press. So I'm aware of this little sign on there. And then I come in one time to do some cleaning and I see this French press and it's used and the coffee grounds are still in there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, who the hell would do this? Like, what kind of an inconsiderate bastard? I was I was so enraged. It's no big deal. I mean, it's just another thing. It was really not a big deal, but it was just an example, right, of how the rock tumbler action works. The more that you're in the tumbler, the more that you're engaged with it in all aspects, not just the nice, like, come and listen to Sunday talks, but like all of the stuff, like as much as possible. The more involved you are in it, the more friction there's going to be. And I had such sort of like a gentle sort of entrance into it and didn't, I was like, yeah, a little bit of wearing and, whatever here and there, but it'd all been pretty easy until I had to clean the kitchen. And then the reason I haven't felt it so far is because I have so much of that sort of that non-jewel like rock protecting me.
Totally. Yeah. We've created these, we've crafted our kind of like afflictions. We've added them on in ways that have protected us, or we think that they're protecting us.
But
they just make it much harder for us to do everyday and spiritual things. So that's fascinating. And I love how like those are kind of those moments where You just immediately see the how the mind has created this narrative, you know, that like this person did this intentionally. Like, how could they not see the note? Like, this must have been their intention to leave it here.
They're not very mindful, Jack.
They're not mindful. They're inconsiderate. They don't care. They don't
That's
care about
right.
me. This is my kitchen that I'm cleaning, and they don't care about me.
So then, so I was talking to our friend Connor about this the other day, and we were having a good laugh about this because he's been involved in all kinds of, he has a lot of responsibilities within the Sangha and has been here for a lot longer than I have. And I was sharing this experience with him, and he's just laughing. He's like, oh yeah, there's a whole lot of that kind of stuff, you know, that happens over time. And it was, there was a realization that I had where I was like, oh, so I have on occasion been irritated, judgmental, maybe mildly angry, maybe annoyed with other Sangha members in some way, you know, I've self and othered somehow. And I was thinking about the fact that, wait a second, somebody in the Sangha has that same thing going on to me, for me. I am in somebody else's story. Somebody else is annoyed and irritated by me, right?
Totally.
Right. This isn't, I'm not unique in this respect. So in that sense, like somebody, I don't know who, right? Nobody's told me that. But out there somewhere, there's like somebody who's like, oh, that damn Daniel, he's so, you know, so whatever.
It's a little bit liberating, right?
It
but
is.
It's like,
it
oh
is.
Yeah. Not everybody has to like me.
Yeah.
Like, we can get along as a Sangha and like try and work through our disagreements and whatever. Like, that's really important, actually. But people don't have to like me. I don't like it. You know, like,
I don't like that
like
at all.
It.
I don't want blame. I do want praise.
Yes, totally. Yeah, I want good reputation. Like, I want people to see me as like dependable, intelligent, funny, you know, like all the things. But I'm going to fall short. I'm going to disappoint, you know, and people are going to disappoint me too. I found this great article. It's by Vishvapani from Cardiff Buddhist Center in England. It's it was a talk given about the Kosambi dispute, which is like an event that happened, you know, during the Buddha's time. And it was the Kosambi Sutta, and kind of describing how like very small things can kind of turn into these really big problems. I think Thich Nhat Hanh even wrote about it in Old Path White Clouds. And I think the kind of originating dispute was that like a monk had left his bowl out on a table and hadn't cleaned it. And another monk was really pissed off about that. And, you know, so that's what started this whole, what ended up being a very political schism, like in that Sangha.
Yeah.
So the way that the Buddha approached this was just by, you know, throwing it back to the monks, you know, and saying, we're not going to stay in the sphere of politics. Like, we're going to talk about practice, you know, like we're not talking about who did what, like how it started, but like, how are we actually engaging with one another now? And there's this wonderful quote from the article that I just found like so useful. So he says, the Buddha's point is that practicing Sangha, not just like being within Sangha, but practicing it as a verb, is about what we can do for others, not what we can expect for ourselves. And that just really struck me because I think I do have expectations of the Sangha, right? Like, I expect that people are going to be kind. I expect that they're going to be respectful, that we're going to be engaging in kind of this like shared, you know, purpose, which I think that is generally what happens, right? But he continues in this quote. He says, "I'd go further. I think we should expect the Sangha to disappoint us." He
Oh.
says, "After all, it is made up of frail and mostly unenlightened individuals."
That's right. That's
Which
right.
absolutely, I am frail. Like, man, I get so sensitive sometimes, and just like, yeah, if I had someone yell at me or be like, kind of, you did this wrong, and I was in somewhat of like a sensitive emotional state, I might go like leave and cry a little bit. Like, that is like, I can be very frail.
Yeah.
And so I just loved that. Like, let's be generous with each other, right?
That's
You
right.
know, like
Yeah.
we are all unenlightened individuals, and importantly, that means that we can change. We're not kind of stuck in these modes of like personality, and you know, behavior. Like, those are things that get acted out, but really our nature is what we're trying to uncover by this rock tumbler, is our
That's
Buddha
right.
nature. So
You know,
really, really
I love
generous.
that. I love that because, you know, so one of the other YouTube talks that I had gotten into was by Thupten Chonyi. It was called The Rock Tumbler Survival Kit.
Nice.
I love that one. That was a great one. And I thought there was some really good practical advice in there, but foremost was this understanding of how rare these people in the Sangha are in the world. Right? That no matter what, the thing that unifies us is this sort of really rare and profound desire to like connect with something greater than ourselves, right? To make our lives really meaningful and to wake up for the benefit of others, right? And so, you know, in that's something that's hard to remember, that these people are in fact, you know, of course, everyone has Buddha nature, but these people are actively working to uncover it and to help others to uncover it. And that the rock tumbler doesn't work if the stones are all of the same exact size, shape, and consistency. What's really good about it, and one of the marvelous things about Sangha, is how different each person is. Each rock, it has its own unique characteristics, even if it's all of the same type, which it's not, but even if it were of all the same type, they're different shapes, right? They have different edges. And so our interactions are not going to be the same. They shouldn't be. That's how the thing works, right? And so some of those interactions, yeah, they might be difficult and they might be unexpected or whatever, but every other rock in the tumbler is there doing the exact same thing, and they work together in a unison, right? We can't do it alone.
Yeah, no, we certainly can't. Yeah, and that would be kind of boring and sad, right? You
That's
know?
right. But we
Like,
have to have it, like, you know, we have to assume, like, that was one of the num that was actually the most practical advice, was this assumption of goodwill towards others.
yeah, thank
Have, no
goodness.
matter what, no matter how that engagement, no matter what that friction looks like, even if it's again and again and again, the same person or people causing the same kind of problems for us or challenging us in the same kinds of ways, you know, like we have to assume they wouldn't be here,
Yeah.
right? If it wasn't for that inherent goodness.
Yeah, that's so important. Yeah, like that we need to stop like psychoanalyzing one another, you know,
Yeah.
and like and just come back to like, what is the shared reason that we're here? That's such great advice. Yeah, one of the pieces of advice that I was really left with was how important it is to develop right view. You know, that like
Yeah.
ultimately, like, if we really want to cut through this kind of like suffering that happens, you know, in our interactions with others, like if we really want to, you know, to get to the core of this, like we have to develop right view, whether that's, you know, really coming to an understanding of like the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma,
Yeah.
you know, the eight worldly concerns, you know, what else, you know, developing the view of emptiness and impermanence, dependent origination, you know, all of these things, and you know, I haven't even come close to a, understanding of those things. And yet, my little kind of windows, the little pinpricks in the, paper on the window that Lama describes, even those have so like much more illuminated my understanding of others and allowed me to be have that kind of more open patience. Like it's still there. I definitely still get frustrated with people. My competitiveness rears its head in weird and totally unnecessary ways. But I still, this kind of like element of just wanting to be there for one another for this really important, very important thing that we're doing, by keeping the lineage going, that is what, we're developing the view for. Like we want to do this for everyone. So,
Yeah, exactly that. I was I wanted there were a couple of things I wanted. We're getting close to the end. I was hoping that I could squeeze these two things in there. I thought that so from the Rock Tumbler Survival Kit by Tutten Chonyi, great video. You have to listen to it or at least
Yeah,
watch it,
great.
right? So one of the things that I thought was so funny about it is she says, yeah, so after a while, you get used to the tumbling action, you get used to the rocks, and everything is kind of getting smoothed out, and you kind of are in the flow. And you think like, yeah, okay, I got this. But then they open it up and they throw new rocks in there.
That's so important, right? Because that is so funny. It's because I was thinking about that today, that like I have this very like concrete version in my head of what my sangha is, and I have it's these particular people, and it's like actually no, it's constantly changing, and those people within that I think is the sangha are constantly changing too, and so like yes, love it, that's so great.
So there was one other thing. Okay, this one is just I think a perfect thing to end with. So Tutten Chonyi had said that while she was preparing for the talk, she had read a legal disclaimer on an actual rock tumbler, and it said on there, it says, "Remember, when buying a rock tumbler, you get exactly what you pay for. It's a machine, not a toy." So, it's intended for use by or under the supervision of an adult. So she says, so choose your community carefully, make sure that it is, in fact, a community that you want to remain committed to, and make sure that there's an adult or at least adult-like people who are present and capable of supervising things.
Fantastic. I mean, I think at Lion's Roar we have both of those conditions. So I think we can feel pretty safe about practicing in our tumbler. Well, Daniel, this has been a total pleasure. I appreciate you so much.
Oh,
Thanks for
same.
being a rock in my
Yeah, thanks for tumbling along with me.
career.
This is good stuff. I
Great,
enjoy
great
it.
stuff.
You've definitely helped me to wear off some of my edges,
Oh,
mostly in
thank you.
harmonious ways. I don't know that we've
I
had.
think so too.
Whatever friction is there, it's good stuff.
Works out.
Thank
All
you so
right, my
much.
friends. Thank you.
Take
We'll see you
care. See you
next
next
week.
week. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.